All right. Morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Friday, everybody. Today is October 3rd, 2025. And our top story this morning, it should be the jobs market. It should be, but it ain't. You know, the whole government shut down. We have no non-farm payrolls today. But along those same lines, we are worried about a subprime credit crisis today. Uh-oh, that's got echoes of 2008 kind of connotation to it, doesn't it? We're not there yet. It's definitely not 2008. It might be 2007. It might be late 2007. Look, we had Lakshmi Ganapathy, the founder and CEO of Unicus Research, on the channel this week, and she did a fantastic presentation on what's going on with Tricolor Auto and the First Brands bankruptcies. She's done great work in auto finance, and that seems to be where it's starting. In subprime auto finance, we obviously have those two high-profile bankruptcies, but we've got an article in Bloomberg this morning talking about since that started, since the Tricolor bankruptcy, we have seen some big moves down in names like Ally Financial, off 13% over 19 days, just a 9 day, or I'm sorry, 13% in 9 days, a 9 day sell-off in Ally Financial. Now, Ally Financial, that is the former finance arm of General Motors. They spun them off after Cash for Clunkers and the auto bailouts in 2008, and they became Ally Financial, but they are still the biggest player in automotive finance. And when all the other banks in 2022 and 2023 said, you know what, we're worried about auto finance, we're worried about the health of the consumer, something doesn't smell right in this market, all the other banks started getting out of lending in the auto sector, Ally dove in head first. And now Ally is selling off. We're also getting sell-offs in some of the BNPL names. They're down double digits over the same time frame. You can see it here, guys. The market is starting to worry about low-end borrowers, subprime borrowers. Now, look, we have had somewhere between 1.5 million and 2 million people have left the country over the last few months as this immigration crackdown has started, both through deportations forced and deportations voluntary. A lot of people left the country, and we know that played a huge role in the Tricolor collapse. Let me ask you this, and Mish brought this up on our phone call this morning. How many of those people had credit card debt here in the States? Are they going to pay that if they're not even in the country anymore? How many of those people had buy now, pay later loans? Credit losses, bank earnings are starting up in a couple of weeks here. Probably, I think 2 weeks we'd start getting banks, or maybe late next week. Watch for worries about subprime borrowers. Watch for increases in loan loss provisions. Watch for increases in charge-offs, guys. It's already started at the low end of the market. Will it spread from there? That's the big question. Will it spread from subprime? And we're already seeing indications that it will. We've got the finance firm Raystone came out yesterday. They announced that they're laying off dozens of employees because of the financial fallout from the First Brands collapse. Raystone was one of the companies that was doing factoring finance with First Brands. First Brands owes them a ton of money. They're not going to get it back. They're laying off workers. We've also got a number of private credit names taking big losses from the First Brands bankruptcy. Several firms, and the losses are in the hundreds of millions for each one of them. That's going to impact financials reporting in the next quarter here. So we can already see it starting to spread to financial firms. Is it going to spread to more layoffs? Well, we don't know if it's going to spread to more layoffs because we don't get a jobs number today. But the private sector data that we have gotten this week, the Challenger job cuts report yesterday, the ADP private payrolls report, none of it was good. It all shows a no hiring, no firing, frozen job market. And that is certainly not enough to prevent a credit crisis. Not when the job market, as it currently stands, is not enough to provide enough income for consumers to sustain this economy. And guys, I've been saying this for freaking years as everybody in the financial press has been like, oh, it's the best economy ever, gaslighting the hell out of people. Everything is so good. Why don't you plebs understand how good you have it? And we've been looking at the inflation numbers and the income statistics and the consumer spending numbers and saying something doesn't make sense here. This should not be possible. The only explanation is debt, that these people are borrowing to maintain a lifestyle they can't afford. Now we are getting the proof of that, and it's showing in subprime first, as it always does. All right. In the meantime, we've got big news overnight. There was a massive fire, or I should say there was a fire at a massive refinery, the El Segundo fire that's owned by the El Segundo refinery that is owned by Chevron just outside of Los Angeles, had a fire last night. We don't have many details on this fire yet. We do know that the fire was not in the storage tank area. It was in the production area of this refinery. We don't know how much of it has been shut down. All personnel are supposedly accounted for, so thank God there's been no fatalities. But this will drive up gas prices on the West Coast. I got messages from some viewers this morning talking about this. This refinery is the size of a freaking city. It is massive. And it supplies something like a third of all of the gasoline in Southern California and along the West Coast. So we don't know how big the impact will be for you folks on the West Coast, but it's going to get more expensive to drive in the short term. We don't know how much. We do have some guesses. Now, even as that is happening, the rumor mill is going this morning that somewhere in one corner of the Middle East, we have got pipeline flow for oil has shut down because the storage tanks are full and they have nowhere to put it. Now, normally I would be very dismissive of internet rumor mills like this, but this is now the second story along these lines that I've heard in 2 days. Yesterday, we talked about how unsold oil cargoes were starting to pile up, that they're loading oil on the ships that they haven't yet sold in the spot market, and how that's indicative of a supply glut and how the marginal buyers are no longer buying. Now we're hearing stories about pipelines shutting down. All right, that's interesting. That's two. Two stories like that is a coincidence. If there is a third, all of a sudden it's a trend. So keep an eye out for that one. We've got several AI stories this morning. BlackRock is nearing a deal to buy Aligned Data Center for $40 billion. Even as Amazon founder and former CEO Jeff Bezos says, AI is in a bubble. Jeff Bezos is saying that now. So over the last month, we have had OpenAI founder and CEO Sam Altman has said AI is in a bubble. Facebook, Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg has said AI is in a bubble. And Jeff Bezos now says AI is in a bubble. And before all of them, Jack Gamble said AI was in a bubble. Starting to think AI might actually be in a bubble. Yeah, but you know, go ahead, $40 billion of other people's money for data centers. Good luck with that. By the way, the companies underlying the AI bubble, they're all making a ton of money, right? They're very profitable, these AI startups. For example, Perplexity AI yesterday announced that their AI browser, which is a search bot, basically, their AI browser that was previously $200 a month is now going to be free. They're giving it away. Of course, that means you are the product. That means they couldn't find anybody to pay to use their stupid AI search bot. And so instead, they're going to try selling your data. Things for that company not going so hot this morning. Also, we've got global meat prices have just hit a record led by U.S. beef. You will eat the bugs. You will own nothing and be happy. I kind of think that's on purpose. I think the gaggle of Malthusian cultists that rule the world at the World Economic Forum want those beef prices to be higher. But this is also the knock-on effect of the culling of the herd that happened a few years ago when beef prices were super low. And of course, the farmers over-harvested and now there's not enough cows. Beef prices are going super high. Oh, we've also got bailouts are coming for farmers. Not necessarily the beef farmers. We're talking about, soybean farmers now. President Trump is proposing billions of dollars in bailouts for farmers. I don't know how they're going to pay for it with the government shutdown. Does he need Congress to do that? I don't know. My guess is when we come out of this government shutdown, it's going to look something like the Democrats get more spending in exchange for the Republicans get more spending. So, you know, that we're shut down over spending cuts. And so the solution, obviously, is to spend more money in exchange for spending more money. That is how the logic works in Washington, D.C. And that's why, folks, there's just not enough gold in the world for what's coming. Maybe that's got something to do with why metal prices are rallying again this morning. And, of course, we're going to spend a few minutes talking about private equity at the end of the show. They are looking for a shortcut to dump their illiquid dog poop holdings into your 401k. We are going to talk about that one at the end of the show. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in markets today. And hey, don't forget that like button. And you new guys right next to it, that subscribe button. Hit that one as well because we do this every business morning. So come on back tomorrow or come back Monday and have your coffee with the melon heads. Well, right now the S&P is still positive, but just barely. You may notice we have been selling off since about 6 a.m., although we started from a pretty high point here. So still 5 points in the green, 0.08% higher. We've got the Dow is doing pretty much the same thing, higher by 69 points or 0.14% higher, but giving up most of its pre-market gains here and headed lower still. And the NASDAQ, same deal, 20 points higher, 0.09% to the upside, although giving back those points right now. We have got a slightly weaker dollar once again here, 97.78 for the Dixie. That is down by about 12 basis points. That's going to put some upward pressure on your metal prices this morning. And we've got interest rates are largely higher this morning. We've got the 30-year yield. That's actually down a fraction of a point, 4.695 for the 30-year. The 10-year is up almost one basis point, 4.099 for the 10-year. The 2 years at 3.559, that's up a point. And the 1 month is at 4.130. That is up almost 3 points this morning. Looking over at the commodities board, it looks like the shiny is doing well again this morning. Spot gold, $3,877. That's up by 20 bucks, almost $21, 0.54% higher for spot gold. Check out that December front month contract for gold, $3,901. Back above 3,900, up by 33 bucks this morning. But the real news is silver. Silver ripping once again here. Now, this is interesting. We had a little bit of a sell-off in silver. Right now, spot silver, 47.64. That's up by 65 cents or about 1.4%, offsetting yesterday's losses. Now, look at that New York front month contract, 47.62. Now, that's up big here, $1.26 higher, 2.7% higher. Big move in those December silver futures. But the important thing, silver is in backwardation. We talked about this maybe happening yesterday. Bob Coleman called this several days ago. The price of silver right now in London is a couple of pennies higher than the price of silver 2 months from now in December in New York. All right. When silver in the future is cheaper than silver now, that is known as backwardation. That's indicative of a shortage of physical metal in London. And that could lead to a surge in prices in London. Now, I mentioned another silver squeeze Friday in the title, and I think this is why the last couple of Fridays, and Bob has done an excellent job tracking this on Twitter as well, we have seen big moves in silver prices on Friday coinciding with options expiration in the weekly options. Retail traders have started piling into the silver ETFs like the SLV, and they have been piling into call options in those ETFs as well. Now, that has created this big premium to net asset value in these funds. And what happens when that happens, when the stock price gets ahead of the value of the metal underlying the fund, they issue more shares, diluting the share price back down. But then they take the money and they go buy physical bars, typically in London, where most of the SLV silver is held. That has caused a shortage of silver in London. That's causing the cost to lease metal in London is going higher. That's causing the cost to borrow shares of the SLV higher as there's a shortage of shares. And the last two Fridays, that has resulted in squeezes in the SLV and higher silver prices. And based on this morning's numbers, it looks like we're headed for that again. Although, hey, you know, things tend to happen at open, so I don't know if it's going to play out that way. But right now, we got $1.30 higher in those December futures. Big moves, as always. I like the shiny. Copper, meanwhile, higher by 1.7%. Platinum is up another 3%, 1633 for January platinum futures. Monster move in platinum this year. Another 2.5% for palladium, which is along for the ride this morning. Crude oil is actually higher by about 36 cents or $60.86 for November WTI futures. No effect yet on the oil futures from that refinery fire, but I think once the damage is assessed, we'll probably be seeing some of that. Bitcoin is having a great morning here. Check out the move yesterday in Bitcoin. $120,432 is priced on Coinbase. Now we're down just off the highs here, but we had a big move yesterday, a couple of thousand higher. I was saying, watch that 120,000 level. That was the resistance line from back here in July. Looks like we are above that level now. The big question is, will we see another high before the onset of winter? The previous high of $124,500 is now in play here, guys. So look, as always, just be careful on leverage. We are near the end of this halving cycle. There's some people out there who say this time is different. Famous last words. I don't agree with that. I have been taking some profits in Bitcoin over the last few weeks. I don't intend to sell all of it. I intend to hold a decent amount of it through the entirety of winter and into the next cycle. But I do think we're nearing a short-term top here. And typically, crypto winter starts with a pretty brutal sell-off. Now, one thing that could potentially trigger that sell-off, I don't think it will, but it could, was this story that I did yesterday about billions of dollars seized in Bitcoin in the UK from the goddess of wealth. Yep, that's what she called herself. I don't really know how to describe this video, guys, but if you think you might be interested in a libertarian Chinese god empress stealing billions of dollars in Bitcoin, maybe check out this video when we're done. I had some fun with that one yesterday. That story is just freaking wild. All right, now let's talk about the head there, the head of the snake, if you will, or the big story this morning. The subprime credit troubles send shares of consumer lenders reeling. Be careful here, guys. It starts in subprime. It doesn't always stay in subprime. Beneath the surface of what's been a remarkably resilient U.S. economy, no, it hasn't, a series of small shocks in the world of consumer credit have combined to rock companies that service the most financially vulnerable Americans. Auto lender Ally Financial tumbled 13% during a 9-day losing streak. Fintech lenders Upstart Holdings and Pagaya Technology sank more than 20% in the same time span. Digital payments company Affirm and lender Bread Financial suffered similar fates. Even Capital One Financial, one of the nation's largest credit card issuers, lost 7%. Be careful in those regional banks here, guys. The sell-offs have been fueled by isolated events. Isn't it funny how they're always like, don't worry, it's an isolated event. And then another isolated event happens. And then another isolated event happens. We're like, God, look at all of these rather isolated events all happening in close proximity to each other. It's almost like there's no isolation at all. But the sell-offs have been fueled by isolated events that have alarms over the health of low-end consumers blaring. The collapse of Tricolor Holdings, which built its business selling used cars and making loans to lower-income and undocumented immigrants, suggested subprime lending stress. Gee, who would have thought making auto loans to people with no social security numbers who were in the country illegally might have been a risky proposition? Who could have possibly thought something might go wrong there? But I digress. Then weak second quarter results from CarMax and a bankruptcy filing from car parts supplier First Brands showed deepening strain in the used car market. By the way, guys, we went in depth on all of these subjects in that interview with Lox Ganapathy that I did earlier this week. Shout out to Lox from Unicus Research. She does excellent work. But together, the event stoked concern that a key swath of American consumers is starting to buckle under the weight of tariffs and a slowing labor market. Let me just say, it is not tariffs. Tariffs are certainly not helping, but what the low-end consumer is buckling under is the freaking inflation that they told us was going to be transitory and has remained above their target for freaking 5 years. That is what consumers are buckling under. I realize it's fashionable because of Mr. Orange to say it's because of tariffs. And again, tariffs are not helping, but it's the cost of living that's killing people here, guys. Let's call it what it is. While high-end consumers continue to enjoy wage gains that fuel spending, worse off Americans have seen paychecks crimped as prices continue to rise. Finally, a little honesty. The threat now is that cracks in subprime credit will widen to more solid areas of the economy and usher in a downturn. And well, we're already starting to see these cracks starting to spread. Take this one. Finance firm Raystone cuts workers after First Brands collapse. Raystone, a short-term financing provider that worked on deals for First Brands Group, has notified dozens of workers that their jobs are being eliminated following the auto parts supplier's sudden collapse, according to people with knowledge of the matter. New York-based Raystone told affected staff in a brief meeting on Tuesday that they were being let go as a direct result of financial struggles at First Brands, said the people who asked not to be identified. First Brands, which owns car parts brands such as Carter Fuel Pumps and Trico Wiper Blades, filed for bankruptcy protection on Sunday after coming under scrutiny for its reliance on off-balance sheet financing to manage its working capital. While there's no indication of wrongdoing, yeah, there is, a newly appointed board committee is now investigating the company's use of roughly $2.3 billion of off-balance sheet financing, Chief Restructuring Officer Charles Moore said in a court filing on Tuesday. The bankruptcy process has revealed that several of those transactions ran through Raystone. The little-known firm, which was spun out of Seaport Global Holdings in 2019, is run by Dave Skrzynski, who previously held roles at Greensill Capital and Citigroup. That's interesting because Greensill Capital, that's the finance firm that went under, leading to the collapse of Credit Suisse, along with Archegos, obviously, that contributed to the collapse of Credit Suisse. But Greensill Capital was responsible for a lot of the losses at Credit Suisse. And the founder of this Raystone company, run by a guy who used to work for them. Isn't it a small world? Meanwhile, we've got knock-on from the First Brands collapse in private debt as well. First Brands fallout exposes risks of lending private debt. Since First Brands Group filed for bankruptcy with over $10 billion of liabilities, the market has been focused on blows to its broadly syndicated investors and trade finance partners. Some of the debt has plunged to around 36 cents on the dollar, with investors facing hundreds of millions of dollars in losses. But the company benefited from another set of lenders that are now asking to be paid back. Private credit. These firms gave First Brands its last infusion of cash before its collapse, and unraveling that capped weeks of investor concern about the company's use of opaque off-balance sheet financing. Sagard agreed to arrange a new $250 million facility for the company in April. That's according to people with knowledge of the matter. Others were bought in, including Strategic Value Partners, which became the largest lender on the deal, said the people who, again, asked not to be identified. The largest holder of the loan, listed as Byram Ridge LLC, with the same address as SVP's headquarters, holds $100 million of the debt, according to court filings. Private lenders also have limited options to cash out or sell investments when things go south. Investors in syndicated loans can sell off stakes to others on a daily basis. They also have insight into where the debt is trading at, while loan valuations and private credit funds can lag. That's fancy finance speak for it is not worth what they tell us it's worth, and they can't sell it easily. They lost a whole bunch of money when First Brands went under. This is the kind of crap they're trying to put into people's 401ks, beating the heck out of that dead horse, guys. But man, it needs to be beaten. So no, it's not contained. These are not isolated events. And we're just not going to know for a few months until all these companies start reporting their earnings just how big the losses are. All right. Meanwhile, we've got news out of L.A. this morning. Investigation underway into the massive fire at Chevron's El Segundo refinery. Details are scarce here, guys, but crews Friday morning continued battling a massive fire that erupted at the Chevron refinery in El Segundo, which sent up large flames and plumes of smoke into the air. The fire broke out around 9 p.m. Thursday and could be seen for miles across the South Bay. Officials said there was no threat to the public, even though for most of the night, the public was told to shelter in place. When you're told to shelter in place, that's usually because there is some threat, but there's no threat to the public. Okay. All refinery personnel and contractors have been accounted for, and there are no injuries, said Allison Cook, a Chevron spokesperson. That's good. The refinery is the largest oil-producing site on the West Coast, and it isn't the first explosion it's seen. It was not immediately clear what caused Thursday's blaze. Now, we have Patrick DeHaan, he's the at Gas Buddy guy on Twitter. He's a pretty good analyst that tracks fuel prices around the country. Now, he's taking a stab at the impact from this. Keep in mind, this is a guess, and he's telling you this is a guess, but this is a pretty well-informed guess. He says this is likely to be a significant problem and potentially for months or more. The refinery can handle nearly 300,000 barrels per day of crude oil and is the largest refinery on the West Coast. Preliminary guess is that gas prices could rise between 35 and 95 cents a gallon on the West Coast, awaiting damage reports. So we don't know how bad it is. But guys, that's the best I can do for you right now. If you're on the West Coast, you're looking at somewhere between 35 cents and we'll round that up to a buck. worth of an impact on your gasoline costs here because of this refinery fire. We just won't know until we have more details. Now, here's where we're going to get into the rumor mill a little bit, guys. We talked yesterday about how those spot cargoes were being loaded onto ships before they were being sold, which means they're storing oil in boats again. That's important. Now we got this one in Redbox this morning. And again, this is a rumor here, but it's important. Oil from Iraq's Kurdistan region to Turkey has stopped because storage tanks are full, according to rumors from two sources. All right, so like let's get the asterisk out of the way. This is a rumor from two sources. It could be two guys who refuse to be named who are both reporting on the same rumor from the same original guy. So this could be BS. But again, the thing with the boats yesterday, this is important because this is now two in a row. And it's also important to note that this is oil from Iraqi Kurdistan flowing into Turkey. The Turks and the Kurds have not always seen eye to eye. As a matter of fact, they kind of hate each other quite a bit. And there has been some stories, you know, recently where Turkey has said, we're not going to get involved in any fighting between the Kurds and Syria with the Syrian government. Like, we're just going to kind of let that play itself out, meaning, you know, if the Syrian government wants to start killing Kurds, they're not going to try to stop them. Now you have Kurdish oil and Iraq is not flowing into Turkey. So this could be pre-existing geopolitical tensions playing out here, or this could be the second sign in as many days of a serious supply glut hitting the global oil markets. And the fact that this coincides with this big crackdown and overcapacity in China, something I did a video about earlier this week, that's worth paying attention to. So keep an eye on oil, guys. We could be looking at sharply lower oil prices here if these rumors are confirmed. Meanwhile, we've got a couple of AI stories this morning. BlackRock nears a $40 billion data center deal in a bet on AI. They're just throwing big numbers at AI here. BlackRock's Global Infrastructure Partners is in advanced talks to acquire Aligned Data Centers, targeting a major beneficiary of AI spending in one of the year's biggest deals, according to people familiar with the matter. Aligned, which is backed by Macquarie, could be valued at about $40 billion in a transaction, one of the people said. An agreement could be announced within days, the people added, asking not to be identified because the information is private. All right, so BlackRock, new deals usually with other people's money. They're buying $40 billion worth of Aligned data centers. Meanwhile, we get this one. Jeff Bezos says AI is in an industrial bubble, but it's okay because society will get gigantic benefits from the tech. Yeah, you know, you're going to lose all your money, but it's okay because chatbots are going to cure cancer just as soon as they're done making AI video slop at OpenAI. Artificial intelligence is currently in an industrial bubble, but the technology is real and will bring big benefits to society, Amazon founder Jeff Bezos said on Friday. The term bubble usually refers to a period of inflated stock prices, you think, or valuations of companies that have disconnected from the fundamentals of a business. One of the most famous bubbles that burst was the 2000.com crash, where the value of internet companies plummeted. This is kind of an industrial bubble, the Amazon founder said. Bezos laid out some of the key characteristics of bubbles, noting that when they happen, stock prices are disconnected from the fundamentals of the business. You know, fundamentals of businesses that lose money but get $500 billion valuations. Yeah, I'd say that's a little disconnected from reality. Bezos would go on to say, it's okay, chatbots are awesome. AI is going to usher in all these benefits for society. But guys, now you've got Sam Altman, Mark Zuckerberg, and Jeff Bezos all saying AI is in a bubble. Meanwhile, BlackRock's like, $40 billion for data centers, no problem. So we all know it's in a bubble, but we're all still bubbling. Is that what it is? Like, are we all just pretending? This really is the emperor in the clothes thing happening in real time here. Case in point, Perplexity AI rolls out Comet browser for free worldwide. This is fun. Perplexity AI on Thursday announced that its artificial intelligence-powered web browser, Comet, is available worldwide and will be free to users. The Comet browser is designed to serve as a personal assistant that can search the web, organize tabs, draft emails, shop, and more, according to Perplexity. The startup initially launched Comet in July to Perplexity Max subscribers for $200 a month. And the wait list has ballooned to millions of people, the company said. By the way, flag on the play, definitely 100% horse manure. Where's my ref here? I know I got my ref. Where the heck are you? There we go. Personal foul. BS. AI CEO. 15-yard penalty. Repeat first down. If they rolled this thing out in July and had millions of people on a wait list for $200, they would not be making it free. All right? You don't lower the price of something when the demand is high. You lower the price for something when there is no demand. So I'm going to go ahead and call bullshit on that millions of people in the wait list. Why would you not collect $200 from them if they were really there? Short answer is they're not really there. And what are they doing then, right? It means they can't sell this thing for $200 a month. And so they're going to sell your data. They're going to offer it for free. They're going to get you to use it. They're going to collect all kinds of information on your behavior. And then they're going to sell that to advertisers. And, you know, okay, I guess they're going to put an ad on the website, which means it's pets.com, pets.ai. That's what this is. Good luck, Perplexity. Meanwhile, global meat prices extend a rally to a record on tight beef supplies. You guys have probably seen this in the grocery store here. Meat not exactly getting cheaper. Global meat prices hit a fresh record high in September in the longest run of monthly gains since 2021 as shrinking U.S. cattle herds are unable to keep up with strong demand for beef. An index tracking meat commodity costs rose 0.7% to cap an 8th straight monthly increase, the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization said Friday. The rally has been largely driven by beef, with the U.S. herd reaching the smallest in decades. Higher prices to top shipper Brazil and worries over the deadly New World screwworm pest in Mexico. So we've got steaks are getting more expensive. This is what the Malthusians want. They want you to eat bugs and soybeans and tofu to save the climate, even as they burn a billion gallons of oil a day to power their chatbots that they're now giving away for free because they can't sell to you. And so they're going to sell your data again. Oh, it's going to be great. Also going on in the agricultural space, guys, pay attention to this one. Trump explores bailout of at least $10 billion for U.S. farmers. I don't know how they're going to get this done legally, especially with the shutdown. So what I suspect is going to happen, I think they're going to end up cutting some kind of deal with Democrats where the Democrats are going to get more spending on healthcare in exchange for the farmers' bailout and probably in exchange for more money for missiles and things that go boom too. In other words, they're going to spend more money, but it's okay because they're also going to spend more money. Pay attention. That's why gold is going higher. Now, look, I did all these videos about Chinese overcapacity and industry shutting down in China. The trade war is absolutely playing a role there. But I mentioned this yesterday. China is also on the board. The trade war is not a shutout. China is targeting U.S. soybean producers. They have not bought any soybeans this year. We talked about that yesterday. And that is why they're talking about a bailout here. That's the Chinese aren't buying it. So they're probably going to take some of that tariff money that they're collecting and they're going to hand it off to the farmers to try to keep them, support them, because the farmers is what the Chinese are targeting. That's really the only things you can do. You can target America through agriculture. You can target America through energy and maybe tech companies. And last but not least, we've got private equity is hunting for a quicker path to tap 401k money. Why do you guys want a quicker path? Why are you in a hurry? It's almost like you're trying to sell this stuff real quick before something happens to the price of it. That's interesting. Hunting for a quicker path to tap 401k money. Alternative asset managers are exploring what may be the fastest, most direct route yet to the roughly $12.5 trillion in American workers' retirement plans, adding their illiquid assets to investors' existing vanilla funds. And, you know, I heard a really good quote. There was a video that a couple of really smart guys who I've been talking with in DMs and text messages, they both sent me this video about this 1866 collapse in the UK. And one of the quotes that really stuck out at me on this video was that when boring companies become exciting, that's when it's time to get out. And what we're seeing here is where they're talking about putting illiquid assets into investors' existing vanilla funds. And when you hear vanilla funds, think boring companies, adding illiquid assets, that's boring things, getting exciting, danger, danger. Blackstone, Carlyle, Apollo, and Blue Owl are among Wall Street firms that are talking with mutual fund companies about finding a way to add private credit and potentially private equity to some existing target date funds. the pre-mixed portfolios that have become a mainstay of 401k plans and that typically invest in stocks and bonds, according to people familiar with the ongoing discussions who asked not to be identified, citing private talks. It also marks a new approach in private equity's fervent campaign to tap the savings of 401k investors. Are they trying to tap it or are they trying to steal it? As its traditional clients, institutions, endowments, and ultra-rich have come under pressure, the once exclusive industry has now turned its attention to the retail crowd. Again, if only there were signs. In conferences, TV appearances, and marketing materials, executives argue that American workers are unfairly missing out on the higher returns that private assets can generate, and that retirement assets are ideally matched for longer timeframes that private deals often require. Really, are American workers unfairly missing out on the higher returns? Because everything I've read is that private equity has to borrow money and create continuation vehicles, and in some cases, continuation vehicles of continuation vehicles, in order to create fake profits or the appearance of profits in order to satisfy their investors' demands. So are American workers being unfairly missing out, or are American workers being targeted as bag holders for the illiquid, mispriced dog shit that they're desperate to get off their books? Huh. I wonder which is more likely. Do you think Wall Street is trying to help the little guy or hurt the little guy? Based on Wall Street's track record, let me know in the comments what you think it is. As always, guys, be careful. They are looking at your retirement plan with a twinkle in their eye. And I just want to say thank you very much to Mr. Nashville Pasta Man. Thanks, brother, for everything you do for the channel. He says Buffett spent $9 billion on Chevron subsidiary last week. We talked about that one. Yes, it wasn't a Chevron subsidiary. It was an Occidental Petroleum subsidiary. Yesterday, Berkshire Hathaway announced that for it was about $9 billion, they're buying the petrochemical arm of Occidental Petroleum, which is kind of interesting because Buffett is also a major shareholder in Occidental Petroleum. And Occidental is going to use Warren Buffett's money to pay down their debt when Warren Buffett also owns some of Occidental. Warren Buffett is on both sides of these deals, of this deal, and I think he's winning in both cases. But no, that was not related to Chevron. That was Occidental Pasta Man. But a good thought, sir. And once again, thank you for supporting the channel. Mr. BTB says, how does all this affect used auto parts? LKQ. I'm not familiar with the LKQ ticker symbol, but I can tell you used auto parts. What happened with First Brands, I'm sure tariffs played a role there. And I talked about this with Locks in that interview, right? We had the Tricolor bankruptcy, the immigration crackdown played a role. The First Brands bankruptcy, the tariffs played a role. But both cases, we suspect there is the double pledging of collateral involved. Off balance sheet, they refer to it off balance sheet financing. Fraud, let's call it what it is. There is fraud playing a role in both of these businesses. So we have these wild policy changes. You know, we went from wide open borders to mass deportations overnight. We went from free trade-ish to tariffs on everything overnight. And when you get big shifts like that, the people who are doing fraud are going to be the first ones to fail. So I think Tricolor and First Brands just failed because they were doing what they were doing, all right? And again, the fraud hasn't been proven. The fraud is suspected. But the fact that they failed so soon after these policy decisions went into place tells me that they were operating by the skin of their teeth the whole time. So how will this affect used auto parts? Used auto parts are going to get more expensive. I think the tariffs are going to make it more expensive. Now, you know, First Brands going bankrupt, if we have fewer players in the space, that's limited supply. That could put upward pressure on prices. But at the same time, consumers' health, if the consumers are really that hurting, if everybody starts getting laid off and wages are going down on average, then you're going to see downward pressure on prices from that too. So, you know, it's hard to predict the first, second, third order knock-on effects that are going to happen from this. But I do think in the short term, auto parts are going to be getting more expensive. What happens after that is anybody's guess. Thank you, Mr. BTB. Can't say the name. Don't want to get flagged. Uncle Fedster, thank you, sir. He says, happy Friday, Jack. Hilarious video on Bitcoin and the Libertarian Empress. Yes, please watch and like Melonheads. Well, thank you, sir, for both the support and the super chat of the channel and for plugging the video on the Libertarian God Queen. I kid you not, guys. You just watch it. Have fun. have fun out there. All right. It's just important. Everybody has fun out there. Thank you, Uncle Fedster, for supporting the channel and for plugging the video, sir. Armando Reyes, thank you, sir. He says, Trump has a crypto coin advisor, Bo Hines. I think he's probably got a couple of them. Bo Hines is the CEO of Tether. Lutnick and Son were appointed to leadership positions in Cantor Fitzgerald. By the way, Cantor Fitzgerald was the prime broker for Tether as well. Actually, there was a pretty eye-opening speech that Lutnick gave before he joined the Trump administration. It was like last summer. He gave a speech all about how basically Tether now has, through Cantor Fitzgerald, the implicit guarantee of the Federal Reserve. It's kind of scary to think that. But when Sam Bankman-Fried went under and when FTX collapsed, Sam tried to fail Tether. He tried to intentionally depeg Tether by doing a mass liquidation. And Tether did briefly depeg. I remember me and Mish were watching that peg like a hawk when the FTX collapse was happening. And then it strangely recovered. And it recovered because Tether was able to meet the redemptions because Tether had sold all their dog shit Chinese commercial paper at Cantor Fitzgerald's insistence and put that money into U.S. Treasuries. And that's the only reason Tether was able to survive the FTX collapse. I guess Sam didn't know that had happened and he had tried to fail it. Go watch that. It was at the Bitcoin conference in Miami. I think it was last summer. Howard Lutnick gave that big speech, and it was a good speech. Check that one out. But I remain very weary of the Tether guys. I remain very weary of stable coins in general. Guys, I like Bitcoin. My interest in crypto stops there. Thank you, Armando, for supporting the channel. T.A. Chapman says, federal pink slip Friday, or will they wait until next week? I think they will wait until after the market close, and then they'll do it. They'll wait until everybody starts their weekend. We like to fire people on a Friday afternoon. Studies have shown we're less likely to have an incident when we do that. Name the movie in the comments down below. But I do think we will probably, at the close of business today, hear something about thousands of federal workers being let go. Thank you, T.A. Chapman, for your generosity, for supporting the channel. Hey, here's T.A. again. Gifting 20 Nobody Special Finance memberships. I raise my melon mug to you, sir. Thank you so much. Welcome, you 20 new melon heads. Don't forget to say thank you to T.A. Chapman if you got one of those memberships in the comments down below. And a reminder, guys, if you are a Melonhead member, you get one free super chat a month. Feel free to use that, and I will read and respond to your questions on the air. Thanks again, T.A. That was awesome. Armando is back again, says, Cantor Fitzgerald acquired a 5% stock in Tether. Nothing wrong there. Also, Trump is the sixth or seventh highest owner of Bitcoin. I don't know that that's – I would challenge that. If Trump owns a lot of Bitcoin, he got in late, and it means he paid a lot for it. Most of the big holders of Bitcoin are guys who bought it when it was like a fraction of a penny. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm doing a double take on that. The Trump family has theirs too. You know, President Trump has really tied his wagon to the horse of crypto, and I think – he is going to regret it. I think some of the things he's done in the crypto space are good. And I think some of the things like Trump coin and Melania coin are just outright disgraceful. I think they were unpresidential, unstatesmanlike, and he definitely should not have done it. And I think when crypto winter hits, and it will hit very soon, I think the left and the media are going to bludgeon him over the head with his crypto investments and the things and the quotes he's made about crypto and some of the policy decisions he's made. They are going to just beat the heck out of him to the point where it might actually play a role in the midterms next year. That's just something I think could happen. And I think he's going to have the same regrets with all of this Project Stargate malarkey and the AI crap that he's hitching his horse to as well. I think he's getting in at the top politically, and I think it's going to cost him big. These are unforced political errors, in my opinion. Thank you, Armando, for supporting the channel, sir. Nashville Pasta Man says, my metals guy said he had no gold for a few days. Oh, he's now buying a smelter at high premiums. Thanks for all you do. It's so much work. Things going to get spicy now that the refinery's popping off. When you say the refinery's popping off, I think we're talking about oil. You know, me and Mish were talking about that refinery this morning, and we're just like, I think Mish said, please don't let it be sabotage. Please don't let it be sabotage. Please don't let it. I really hope it was nothing like that. I have no reason to believe it is other than it's happening overseas. But energy infrastructure is fair game in this recent spat of geopolitical conflicts. Now, the other thing is refineries are just old and poorly maintained. So we haven't built a refinery in this country in decades. Maybe it's blown up because it's old and we need a new one. Just a thought, build a new refinery. I know, crazy, right? Metals guy having no gold for a few days. I have been watching a lot of the stacking channels a lot lately, and I have noticed a slight uptick in buying activity. Some of these coin shop owners and metal dealers are reporting a slight uptick. The sellers still outnumber the buyers big time, but the buyers are starting to come back. Maybe a little bit of FOMO now that the prices have moved. The buyers are starting to come back, and I've noticed the premiums have ticked up ever so slightly, and I mean ever so slightly. So the buying enthusiasm, it's moving in the right direction in the physical market, but still very much sellers dominating the market in precious metals right now. Thank you, Pasta Man, for your generosity, for supporting the channel. Armando's back again. He says, I bet Warren Buffett is glad he bought an oil and gas company. You know, what Buffett bought was a petrochemical company. They buy oil and they sell oil derivatives products. So I don't know. I've been thinking about Buffett's decision to buy the petrochemical arm of Occidental. And it could be a bet on lower oil prices, believe it or not, because that's the input cost for what this Occidental company sells. It's not their output. They don't sell oil. They buy oil. So, you know, if oil tanks, then the oil derivative products are probably going to go down in price also. But it's possible their margins could expand at the same time. So I'm not really sure what to make out of Buffett buying the petrochemical arm of Occidental. But I'm not convinced he's trying to call a bottom in oil here. He might be actually calling for oil to head a lot lower. And then when I hear these stories about pipelines shutting down because the tanks are full, about spot cargoes being loaded with nowhere to go, I don't think oil has seen a bottom yet. Call me crazy. Thank you, Armando, for supporting the channel. Tom Dillon, thank you, sir, for your generosity, for supporting the channel. I appreciate that. He says, doesn't off-book financing or off-balance sheet financing suggest something suspicious? Yes, it does. Yes, it does. It's not outright illegal automatically, but a lot of the illegal shit happens like that. I thought only the mafia did that with their legitimate businesses. The mafia that doesn't exist, right? You know, this we don't talk about this thing of us. I you know, it's interesting that Bloomberg is like, there's no indication of fraud. These are isolated events. Whenever something bad happens, the financial press, their default setting is, don't worry. It's an isolated case. Everything is good. Relax. Because it's sell-side research. Because they are trying to get people to buy stocks. And that's always their default setting. Whenever something bad happens, I mean, they should be screaming from the rooftops about private credit right now, about what's happening in 401ks. They should be warning people like I'm doing, like, yo, this is freaking theft on an industrial scale, what they're trying to do here. Wall Street is literally stealing your freaking future from you in broad daylight with the blessing of the government. And that they're not doing it. They're just like, well, sometimes illiquid assets have difficulty being marked to market using all this financial speak. Yo, they're stealing your retirement, dude. That's what they're doing. But the press doesn't call them out for it. Who does the press work for? It ain't you. It ain't us. Thank you, Tom Dillon. Appreciate the super chat. And hey, look, he's a new member. Welcome to the Melonheads, Tom. Thanks again for supporting the channel. Just a reminder, use that free super chat as well as you, Mr. Mike Polizzini. Welcome to the Melonhead, sir. Thank you for your support of the channel. I appreciate that very much, guys. By the way, while we're at it, Fridays, Mr. Mike and Mr. Tom, on Fridays, we get together on Zoom once a week. We do a open mic, if you will, Q&A session on Zoom for the magnanimous Melonheads on YouTube and Patreon. So maybe I'll see you on one of those. Chris Bott, thank you, sir, says, libertarian god queen is Janet Yellen's sister and lover. Oh, so we've got an incestuous libertarian god queen. Okay. All right. That's interesting. Queen of Lover. Jack, I just want to tell you that my sister is no threat. She is no rival of mine. I will steal the throne of Liberland. I will have her 5 million pound crown and scepter if it's the last thing I can do. I am the real queen of the libertarians. My sister is just a pretender. Oh, okay. Janet, You went a little Game of Thrones there, Janet. I think that was uncalled for. I mean, your family, after all. Let's not be too hasty here. But thank you, Chris Bott. You really set Janet off there. Hopefully, a little. I don't know. They call it fratricide when brothers kill each other. What do they call it when sisters kill each other? We'll just go with fratricide. I'm sure there's a feminine equivalent of it. Somebody police my linguistics here, will you? Thanks a lot, Chris Bott. I appreciate the super chat and the support of the channel, as well as the opportunity to bring out my Janet. We just don't see Janet that much these days. Anyway, thank you for having your coffee with the Melonheads, everybody. I really appreciate all the generosity in the super chats, you guys. You guys have been awesome this week. Thank you so much. Also, shout out to my magnanimous Melonheads on Patreon and YouTube. Thank you guys for supporting the channel. Looking forward to 2 p.m. Eastern time today on Zoom, our weekly get-together that we do every week. Links down below should you feel so inclined. I'm off. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.